Can we make this movie any better? Pearl Harbor is next.
December 7th, 1941. A date which will live in infamy.
And welcome to Fantasy Picks Movie Edition. My name is Robert Moda. I'm your host. And with me, I have Joe.
What's up, guys?
And I have Ralph.
How you guys doing?
We are all doing very well, man. So today is the big day that we are talking about Pearl Harbor, the movie. How are you guys feeling about that?
I mean, it cost me $8 and I lost 3 hours of my life. I'm not getting back for the third time. I don't know how I've seen this movie three times, but I've seen it three times. I shouldn't have, but here we are.
Awesome. Awesome. So how's everyone doing today?
Not too bad, man.
Not too bad.
You're doing all right. And to tack on to the last question, I mean, I don't want to be too aggressive, but I mean, I probably would have rather lived in Pearl Harbor like a couple years after it happened than watch this movie again.
Yikes.
Wow. Yikes.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
That's pretty rough, man. So before we get started, man, have you guys seen anything good, man? I mean, what's going on in the world of film or television that you guys are have been seeing, watching, or excited for?
Well, I just watched the first episode of Peacemaker, and it's awesome. So if you guys haven't seen it, it's on HBO. It's funny. John Cena's doing his thing. It's worth watch. So definitely worth it. So I would check that out. And I have been also rewatching Punisher because it's just incredible. So
that is an awesome, awesome show that Netflix had the Marvel deals. And hopefully, you know, they'll bring in back Charlie Cox as Daredevil in the MCU. So hopefully everybody that was involved in with the exception of hopefully Iron Fist, but hopefully they'll recast that.
Iron Fist was so panned that I didn't even watch it for free. Like I I heard nothing good about it, and I just couldn't imagine turning that back on once got past the credits the one time.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bad. Yeah, I actually just finished watching Peacemaker, and the first episode, you know, kind of got me, and then the other two, I'm still kind of waiting for it to have some momentum for me, because I'm not sure about it yet. The one show I am, you know, really liking is the Book of Boba Fett. That one's pretty good, even though the third episode is a little hard for me, but the second episode I thought was awesome.
Yeah, I still got to catch up on those, so I'll make my way through it. I went a little hard in paint on Saturday at the bar, so spent most of my day on the couch on Sunday. We'll get there.
Had a little bit of a nice night out.
Not too much sauce.
Yeah, no. And actually, the one movie I'm actually really eager to watch coming up is Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Especially after watching Spider-Man, which I'm sure you guys have seen. I mean,
probably
one of the best MCU movies out there, if not close to the best.
Yeah, no, that was solid. That was worth it. Like I said, if I'm going to the movies and paying for the Atmos theater, get the real experience. It was worth it. So,
yeah, Joe's our resident audio expert. I mean, he's the one that has the big home theater in the home, and you know he likes to have, you know, something as good, if not slightly better, than what you get in the theater.
We try.
So yeah, guys, you know, so here it is, Pearl Harbor. Let's talk about Pearl Harbor. I mean, so this movie is based on the real life events that happened in World War II, the start of the war for the United States, the attack on Pearl Harbor. It stars Ben Affleck as Rafe McCauley, Kate Beckinsale as Evelyn Johnson, Josh Hartnett as Danny Walker, John Voight as President Franklin D. Roosevelt, Alec Baldwin as Major Jimmy Doolittle, along with a supporting cast of other well-known actors. Produced by Jerry Bruckheimer and directed by Michael Bay. The story is about friends Ben Affleck and Josh Hartnett, who grew up together and joined the service as pilots. Ben's character, Rafe, goes off to fight the war in Europe, but before that, he meets a nurse by the name of Evelyn Johnson. They fall in love, and she waits for him to come back from the war. Ben is reported killed in action, and Josh's characters Danny and Evelyn fall in love afterwards. Rafe comes back home and finds out that his friend Danny and his thought-to-be-waiting girlfriend are now together. The attack on Pearl Harbor happens. We declare war on Japan, and the Doolittle raid is planned, while there is a love triangle, bad dialogue, and some comedy in the middle of all this.
What are your thoughts, guys? I mean, here's a movie that I watched this movie, my first thought was, this is supposed to be about Pearl Harbor. And somehow the studio wanted to show the innocence of what America was back then, you know, how naive we were before the war and everything. And then it goes into this love triangle. And I think there was a better way to do that. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it, is that, you know, this little movie called Titanic came out first, just a small movie, not a big deal, made a boatload of money, character driven story. Admittedly, I just watched it for the first time front to back like a month ago. But anyway, you have a character driven story that's loosely based on history and people in history, and they took some liberties with it, but obviously real event, tragic, wildly successful, much better story. The acting worked a lot better. So anyway, they're trying to capture that success and do the same thing with Pearl Harbor. And, you know, I think the movie in particular has the unfortunate circumstance. I mean, it's bad. It's really bad. But it's also sandwiched in between probably two of my favorite war movies of all time, or at least miniseries and movie, with Saving Private Ryan and then Band of Brothers. Both are, which historically accurate, extremely accurate. And this movie, which, well, is not, to put it mildly. So, but even without all that, you know, the one good thing it did do is that it drew attention to an event that's important in American history. And I think people got re-engaged, with Pearl Harbor and the attack and everything like that because of the movie. I think that point succeeded, but overall it was just, you know, not well done. The effects are great. Faith Hill can sing a good song. It's rough. It's a rough movie to get through.
It is.
Go ahead.
I think what happened was that, like we've talked about before in the past, they were trying to strike the iron again with the magic that Titanic had, and it wasn't made for an audience like us. It was made for teenagers that wanted to go see a love story, but like it was also given like the guys, quote unquote, an action movie to see. And it's not a mix you can do that's going to be effective. Like, I don't think of any movie that's based around war and love. I don't think it's ever going to please two separate audiences at the same time. That's the problem that they had with that movie.
Right.
Boss. Hacksaw Ridge.
So here's the thing that I felt like when I saw this, right. Hollywood went through this whole thing where they wanted to do, you know, stories about World War II. And I'm not sure if it started with Saving Private Ryan, but Saving Private Ryan was a very successful movie, very gritty. It definitely showed, especially the opening sequence is one of those sequences that when you watch it, you're basically speechless because you just can't believe how horrific that moment in time was.
I mean, it literally caused PTSD for some people who went to go see the movie.
Exactly. So it's one of those movies that, you know, so it did very well in the box office. It was very well received. I mean, it was done by Steven Spielberg. It had a great cast, especially with Tom Hanks and Matt Damon and, you know,
Fassbender, Vin Diesel, a whole bunch of other people are in it. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's a movie that actually did very well when it came to this World War II story. And then you had other World War II movies that came out because, you know, of course, Hollywood, when there's like the flavor of the month, all of a sudden everybody has to make a movie about something.
Mm.
So there were a lot of World War II movies out there, some good, some bad. And then, of course, Titanic was there too. So Titanic was a great movie in the sense of, hey, you know, it was a big blockbuster, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, you know, became, you know, household names. And this love story happened. And of course, it made $1 billion. Then here comes, you know, Pearl Harbor, and somebody in Disney decided, hey, this is going to be the next Titanic. While Titanic was a tragic story, the difference, I think, for me is that there was no footage of the boat sinking. There was no footage of the lives and things like that. Like, there was more footage during the 40s on the war and, you know, and what things were happening and how life was at that time compared to, like, you know, I think Titanic. So I feel like that love story was like, okay, you know what? Sure. We'll roll with it. This one, it just seems like, you know, they come in and it just wasn't a love story. This thing was like a love triangle, which I think was the most stupid thing. So for me, I think the love story part should have just been gone. I mean, that's just me. And plus all the inaccuracies from the movie, the cheesy dialogue, the fact that they try to cram so much in 3 hours. I mean, honestly, I think this movie could have been just 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely too long. I mean, if we look at it, you know, we're going through the story, you know, how was it received? Well, $140 million was the largest budget of the time for any movie. And that apparently wasn't big enough for Michael Bay. So he gave up $4 million of his own dollars and like quit a bunch of times to try and get even more money. But
he quit. Yeah, he quit 4 times, gave up some of his money. So did Jerry Bruckheimer. Yep. And some of the actors too, from what I hear. They all, you know, said, okay, we'll give up some money. So, and we'll take some of the box office receipts.
I'm glad, yeah, they believed,
you know, they got this huge budget. Listen, the fact of the matter is the movie made money. It was the sixth highest grossing film in 2001. So, you know, it was successful, but it has the dubious honor of being the only movie that won an Oscar and also nominated for all of the worst movie categories at the Razzies. So I think accurate, like what it won an Oscar for, which I think was sound editing. Yeah, good job. Yeah. That stuff was awesome. That was a bit.
And by the way, it was Michael Bay's only Oscar that he has ever won in any of the movies that he has ever done.
That's crazy.
No, it's not. He shouldn't have got that.
Yeah,
one.
True. But.
Well, look, I mean, let's break it down and let's kind of like, you know, let's be raw about it. Was Michael Bay the right person for this job?
No,
right? The one thing Michael Bay does really well is explosions. He knows how to frame shots really well. Like, he has these really, like, I'll give you an example. So there's a shot where Ben Affleck and Kate Beckinsale, you know, they're at the train and she runs to him. Right. And you got all this steam from the locomotives and stuff like that. And it's done between two car, you know, the between two trains. And it's just a really nice shot.
very well framed, very nice. It had, again, it had a very 1940s kind of look to it. So the other part that I really like also was the baseball field when the attack happened. The kids that were playing baseball as the kid throws the baseball, right? The camera follows the kid's gaze, and all of a sudden you see the planes flying by. I thought that was a really cool shot. So, like, Michael Bay knows how to do these shots. He knows how to actually, I'll be very honest with you. The man, I think, when it comes to, like, you know, showing off the military is phenomenal. Why the armed forces having used them for, you know, the armed forces commercials, I don't know. I know that he is also very good at showing off women. You know, I mean, when you look at all his movies, I mean, every woman that, you know, all the women in his movies are, of course, very glamorous and beautiful. And coming from the music video side of things and doing also, you know, commercials and stuff like that, he knows how to frame them and like make them look very beautiful, glamorous. And he does that very well. What he doesn't do very well is have a cohesive story.
Yeah.
You know, and don't get me wrong. I love The Rock. Armageddon is entertaining.
Sure.
Even though it's over the top, it's entertaining. You know, so again, The Rock, Armageddon, he has a few movies out there that I would say they're just popcorn flicks. The first, you know, Transformers, I actually enjoyed.
Oh yeah. I mean, I loved that movie.
It wasn't bad. It just, he got carried away. He decided to be, you know, do more Michael Bay stuff in every movie he did. And towards the end, it was just a disaster, whatever he was doing with the Transformers. But that being said, I think this particular project was not for him. I think something like this should have been done with a director that knows how to tell this kind of story. And I think he could have done it in 2 hours and 10 minutes or something like that. And this thing is 3 hours.
Yeah. You take out chapters. I think I joked with you on the side when we first watched it. You take out chapters 2 through 12 and you don't miss anything.
Yeah. Only that, I mean, I understand that they tried to show that America wanted, they wanted to show that America retaliated in the Doolittle raid and all that stuff. I get it. Maybe just mention it like post credits. I don't know. Like focus on the event and honor the event and the story of the day. And I mean, even then with a budget of $140 million, he couldn't get, you know, a historian or someone to fact check. I don't know, like the whole movie.
Yeah, what gets to me is that he had a lot of, from what I hear, I mean, from what I've been reading, he had a lot of historians. He had a lot of people, you know. Look, I mean, again, this is all just, you know, internet research. And we know that, you know, the internet is the not the most reliable source of information sometimes out there. But according to him, you know, he had a lot of historians. He had people that were actually there. And praise them for, you know, showing, you know, exactly what it went through. For me, I think what happened was that they told him, hey, this is what happened. And he went ahead and said, cool, I'm going to do this because I just want to show, you know, this part. Or I want to show, you know, I just want to, you know, reinterpret the scene or the that moment with something else. And
so many of those things to the timeline, the Japanese generals or something meeting and discussing outside, like they don't do that. Like international Japanese fans were really, really, really upset because that's not what they do.
No, they don't.
Let's pick another really pivotal scene in the movie, I guess, where the hospital starts getting bombed. Never happened. Literally just it didn't happen. So yeah, I mean, to your point, yeah, he took liberties in what happened, but
right,
if it's a historical movie or about an event, which clearly this movie wasn't meant to be that, it's meant to be, I don't know, a love story. And it did pay tribute to the people of Pearl Harbor, but it I don't know, I think it, like we all said, it definitely missed its mark.
It was a cash grab. They were trying to get, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was released in the spring. So it was technically a summer. It came out right in the beginning of the summer movie season. But like to the effect of what you're talking about with mentioning stuff, just like in the credits, like I immediately, because I already dated myself, because I talked about chapters on the DVD for the kids out there. It's scenes on Blu-ray or 4K, but like DVDs just have chapter markers. If we really want to date ourselves, I probably have the VHS somewhere where we had to use time code to find certain sections. But the you take out, I called Rob like immediately when I found out I had to put in a second disc, and I'm like, I haven't had to do this in like 18 years. You literally could have took that second disc and threw it away and just had the speech from who was the president? Oh my god, at the time,
Roosevelt,
right? Okay, you could have had Roosevelt do his speech that we were going to war, and literally just like panned away, and then had like an over credit lay saying, such and such date in history is the day we, you know, had this battle, and then led to the events of, you know, Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and
yeah,
end movie done. Like, we know what happens after the fact.
Oh, absolutely. And I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think, like, you know, I mean, look, I think the fact that it was under the Disney banner and they wanted it to be PG-13.
True. It has something to do with it.
I think, you know, they kind of fluffed it up because they wanted everybody to see it. Again, they wanted this to be one of those summer movies that they thought that it was going to be the next Titanic, which, you know, sadly it wasn't. And how it was received, a lot of people, that was the biggest complaint, was like the whole love story, you know, things, the cheesy dialogue, things like that. I mean, yeah, it took in almost $500 million, which, yeah, all right, it made its money back. But it's not a movie that I could sit down and watch Saving Private Ryan 35 times and I will enjoy it every time.
Yep.
There are movies out there that you would just rewatch over and over and over again. This one is one of those movies that I'll fast forward to the Pearl Harbor attack, you know, to the attack there. And that is it. That's all this movie is for me, is just that part right there, which is sad because there was just no story. I felt like the story was just not there. And I think, honestly, they should have concentrated on not only the attack, but the servicemen and women and what they really were going through at that moment. And while they showed something like that, I mean, they did show, you know, like these poor, you know, sailors that were just, you know, trapped in these ships when, you know, the bombing happened and, you know, and things like that. But I think that could have been told in a different way, where the movie could have concentrated on them and not the stupid love triangle. And then all of a sudden the Doolittle attack. And
yeah,
it was just so much crammed in there. It's just like, concentrate on that alone.
Yeah. It was far too broad in scope. You know, I think what would have been better was trying to show, you know, like maybe you start the movie with, you know, the Japanese planning a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, Japan. I don't know. Like, you could do the day, right? Like, you could do the planning and everything that led to it, and you're good.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just concentrate on the planning. I mean, what led to it, things like that. I mean, listen, if you want to show if one particular character, like, let's say Ben Affleck. I mean, and Ben Affleck, look, I think as an actor, he's a great actor. I think as a, you know, he's a great director, of course. This was not a part that I think was for him. You know, he turned it down.
I mean, he turned it down.
You know who the original person that came, right? Fassbender?
Yep.
Yeah, so Fassbender, actually, he auditioned for the movie. That was his first movie audition. And, of course, you know, they turned him down. But that being said, I mean, I think, and he was trying to have some kind of some type of accent. I'm not sure, like in the beginning of the movie, I don't know what accent he was trying to do, But it just, I don't know, his just his character just wasn't, it didn't make me care for him at all. It didn't make me care for any of those three people. If they would have just died in the Pearl Harbor attack, I would have been happy about that. And I know that sounds bad, but it was just like, they're just not great characters. And that's not to say that Ben Affleck just, you know, wasn't up for the task. I just think that maybe another actor would have probably portrayed a version of that, or a version of a character like that. And you know what? Have him have a girlfriend that he says goodbye in the beginning of the movie and probably sees her at the end of the movie or something like that if he lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, this, again, I keep going back to the love triangle, which I really felt like it took away from
what the movie was supposed to be about. You know, real people.
Very loosely.
Yeah. 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 Very. But it just didn't work. It didn't work.
No, it did not work.
And I don't necessarily think Ben is bad for the role. Maybe at this point in time in his life. But I think the characters, the writing, there were things, those were all bad. They didn't lend it to him doing more with what he was given. He was just like, I got paid. He probably had his own.
I mean, look, Michael demons. Michael Shannon said in an interview that when he met with Michael Bay, Michael Bay was quoted to say, "Yeah, this script is ridiculous," or something like that. It was like even the director put down the movie. So, I mean, you could tell that was a cash grab for him too. But
it worked.
The fact that you have the director himself actually say that, just, you know. So here's what I would say. I mean, so we know what, you know, we know, I think, what went wrong. I think, again, they were trying to give it kind of a 1940s, very vintage kind of way of, you know, glamorizing Hollywood type of thing. And it didn't work. So this is the part where now we are going to pick the actors, directors, and everybody else. And how would we fix this movie? So I'll start with you, Ralph. What do you think?
Oh, man. So I'm looking at the list of the top actors and actors, including actresses, because that's not really a term used anymore, from the year before. And it goes by, you know, what they averaged, their star score. And there's just so many people, like, probably close to being available. I would say, like, if we're just casting the main Hartnett, I wouldn't recast. Like, he proved it 8 months later when Black Hawk Down came out. Like, he's good in war movies. And like, he was like, that character he played in that movie was spot on. I don't think, and I think he did it. Like, I think if you took any of these characters outside of the movie and they read those lines, they played the parts well. It's just the material they were given. That being said, looking at some of the, it's really tough because there's a lot of good actors from that time frame that could have been cast in those roles. So you got DiCaprio was big back then. I mean, he's still big now, and he was relatively new, but obviously you don't want to cram him after he was in Titanic into a movie like this again. But even,
well, I mean, if you let him live,
I guess,
you know, even if he crashes into the ocean, I'm sure he'll have a raft this time.
But you had like Hugh Jackman, who was relatively new on the scene.
Right.
Yeah. Brad Pitt.
I think Brad Pitt would have been a good part for him.
Like, there's any of a number of people could have did the role that Alec Baldwin played, which was like around that same time. You had people like Kevin Spacey. You had Russell Crowe.
You actually don't even have to really go out far of the person who was almost considered, in Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Costner was up for consideration of the role.
Yeah, he turned it down, though. But, I mean, I think he would have been good in the role, too.
Good.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, back then you had from De Niro to, Anthony Hopkins, Dustin Hoffman.
So, you know, there's quite a few. I mean, even Gary Oldman, I think, back then. No, well, back then, maybe. Well, Gary Oldman has proven that he could transform himself into pretty much anybody he wants.
What about Sean William Scott taking the place of Ben Affleck?
Oof.
Have Stifler playing Ray.
Yeah, not, no.
That's a different kind of movie, yeah.
That's a different movie. Maybe a Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. You know. Well, I think that my if I was coming out with this story and I was trying to pitch it to somebody, I mean, the first thing is it going to be rated R or is it going to be PG-13? And I think on something like this, it should have been rated R.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
that's
sure.
That's my first thing. So let's say, okay, so we'll make the movie rated R. The story is basically just going to concentrate on the Pearl Harbor attack.
Yep.
And that's pretty much it. And what probably led to it and the consequences to Japan. But that could have been probably done in a 5-minute snippet towards the very end.
Right.
Or something like that. So directors, what do you think about directors? Who do you think that can actually tackle something like this at the time?
Well, so I gave this some thought, obviously, based on the movies that came out. And, you know, Spielberg is but one man and can't tackle Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, and Pearl Harbor simultaneously. I think he would have been World War II'd out at that point. But, I mean, the man's treatment of World War II and what he did in both projects in Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan are just absolutely incredible. So that would be a dream. But if I actually thought of other directors who I think did a good job with war movies around that time too, you have to consider Clint Eastwood. I know his movies don't get talked about that much, Letters from Iwo Jima and Flags of Our Fathers, but
right,
fact of the matter is they both have like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes and they're both really good movies. They're long, but they're also very good.
Right.
And Mr. Wonderful, Christopher Nolan, I would like to see what he could have done too. Granted, he took on Dunkirk and he did that years later, but
And remember that this is probably a younger Christopher Nolan, which probably not as experienced as he is now.
Dude, first movie was there's a movie before Memento, but the one that most people remember, that's a pretty good way to introduce yourself to the world.
Right.
He could have done it, even though he probably didn't have the chops at the time of being taken on something that with a budget of that high, but he definitely could have done it.
No, absolutely. I actually think, you know, like if Stanley Kubrick was still around at that time, because he died in 1999, I think Stanley Kubrick would have done a very gritty, I would say not only gritty, but probably, you know, very visceral kind of, you know, type of movie where, you know, it would just, you'll get up from the seat going, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, would have had a message.
Yeah, because Stanley Kubrick's, yeah, because Stanley Kubrick's, you know, Full Metal Jacket. I mean, when you see how he depicted those times in Vietnam, I mean, it was harsh.
Yeah, but a lot of rhetoric there too. Like he said what he wanted to say
exactly
about the times, captured it through characters that you cared about. There's no doubt that like you while it was character driven to an extent and right, still capturing the time, it, you know, everything was in place and you wanted to see the story of those people unfold through
right
through the war.
How about somebody?
Yeah, no, he definitely would have.
How about somebody like Oliver Stone?
Oh man, the last good thing Oliver Stone did was Any Given Sunday.
I mean, I think any of the big, I mean, like big names.
My pick straight up would have been Francis Ford Coppola, just because of Apocalypse Now, and like that would have been a whole different movie, and it would have captured like the actual essence of Pearl Harbor, just like he did with Vietnam. Like he just did an incredible job with that movie.
Well, I mean, if you speak to a lot of Vietnam vets, they say that, you know, Apocalypse Now was a little exaggerated, and, you know, but
oh, sure.
Everybody, it's funny how when you talk to veterans, everyone has different opinions depending. I mean, look, in a big war, everybody was doing different things and everybody experienced something different. But yeah, no, I think, you know, I mean, I think any of those would actually work really well. I mean, those are way better than, at least I think, than Michael Bay being in charge of this type of movie. I mean, like I said, since it's rated R, you know, you're not going to give it a Disney. I mean, I would probably give it to somebody like Universal or, you know, or Warner Brothers in order to do something like that. And I think, you know, when it came to, like, you know, the visual effects and stuff like that, I mean, Industrial Light and Magic at the time, Industrial Light and Magic was considered like the best of the best when it came to visual effects houses. Their competitors were like Digital Domain. They had a few, you know, effects houses out there, but ILM was always like the top best one. And they're still pretty good. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're still phenomenally famous for what the stuff they've done. So I would have kept them. And then from what I, you know, the locations where they did the movie, I think they did some of them in California. They did, you know, a lot of the Pearl Harbor stuff was done in California from what I hear.
Yeah. The bits in Hawaii, they actually use the same location that Jurassic Park was filmed in. So they have bunkers and stuff built into the hill as you're going around down to the valley where the dinosaurs ran. And they actually have the Pearl Harbor signs. You could get out and you can actually check out some of the uniforms and stuff that were used in the movies. And you can actually see real pillboxes that faced out towards the ocean, which is pretty cool. Most of it was elsewhere, given because they're historical landmarks. It was the same thing with Saving Private Ryan. They asked to be able to use the beach, and it was a hard no,
right?
Because it's a it's a historical landmark. You want to preserve it, and it's as it is, and they'd have to modify it greatly to do what they needed to do in the movie. So, like, Spielberg found a place that was close that gave the same feel.
Right. And that happens with any movie production out there. You know, you always try to, I mean, that's why you got, you know, location scouts that just go out there and say, okay, this is good. This is the closest this is going to look like to this one particular, you know, spot in the story or something like that, which is fine. I think the biggest disservice they did was that they did not show the Arizona in modern times.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, in the end, just show the damn thing, you know, as it is now. I mean, that right there, to me.
What ships did they show at the end in the credits, though?
None.
They showed, like, crusty ships.
I think they showed, like, a ship, you know, like, in the, like, you know, like, again, they try to do the Titanic thing where they, you know, they showed it at the bottom of the...
Oh, you mean show it before or, like, and it's, like, during wartime, or did you mean
show it like after, like, show it exactly where it's at, show it, you know. I don't know, I just think that they could have done something with that. Of course, you know, I think for the score, let me tell you, man, Hans Zimmer is a phenomenal composer, and I just think that he could have gone back to the drawing board on this one.
Oh, in terms of the score.
In terms of the score, I think that, you know, they were trying to romanticize it because of that love story, you know, and stuff like that. So there was a lot of the love themes. And of course, there was, and back then, you know, every movie had to have a song to go with it. I think they didn't need a song for this one.
No, I mean, they just saw that it was, again, successful with Titanic, and they copied it, tried to get a lot of money, and they got a decent amount. But not, you know, not Titanic money, not that billion.
No, not Titanic money.
Yeah, I remember how often people would buy, like, movie soundtracks and just listen to them on repeat. Like, people today be like, what are you talking about, a movie soundtrack? It's like, all right, never mind.
I am one of those people that I collect movie soundtracks. I listen to them all the time.
Whitney Houston took that one to the bank, son.
Yeah, no, that's exactly true.
I mean, other than, let's say, the director, I think, as I alluded to, the entire story would change.
No, absolutely. And this is what I think. So, you know, again, you know, so here it is. You know, we have a story where we're just going to concentrate on Pearl Harbor and, you know, nobody else is, you know, what's in their pants or anything like that, you know, and who's doing who in the background. We'll have a director, something like, you know, again, like either Steven Spielberg or, you know, Nolan Eastwood. I mean, we're looking at Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese. Cool. I mean, has Martin Scorsese ever done a war movie?
I don't think he did, man.
What if Tim Burton did the movie?
It would have been entertaining.
It would have been, everybody would have been goth. All right. So we determined somebody like, you know, let's say Spielberg or, you know, or Francis Ford Coppola or Nolan or even Quentin Tarantino. Although I think Quentin Tarantino back then would have probably done something very different. But so, yeah, so, you know, somebody like that, you know, so we determined that, you know, so our movie is going to be just, you know, strictly going to be on the on Pearl Harbor. It's going to be somebody, let's say, you know what, let's give it to Brian De Palma. No, not Brian De Palma. Yeah, I'm going to give it to Brian De Palma. Francis Ford Coppola. So we're going to give the film to Francis Ford Coppola. We're going to have, we'll have probably like, I don't know, 20th Century Fox do the, or you know what? I'd rather do Universal because they'll keep it at the 2-hour mark. And I think this all could have been under a budget of, let's say, $120 million.
Dude, Saving Private Ryan, $70 million.
$70 million. Look at that for Saving Private Ryan. So
Hacksaw Ridge was 40. So
40 million. So we're going to keep the budget. Let's say that we keep the budget at $100 million. Because of course, you know, we're going to have planes. We're going to have, you know, we're going to be bombing, you know, ships. And of course the score, I'm going to go all out and go, you know, we'll give it to, you know, John Williams and see what he could do with that. I'm sure he'll come up with something great, and we'll have absolutely no fucking music. I mean, nobody sings during this shit unless there's somebody in an airplane that's about to bomb somebody. And that's about it. And he's fucking probably whistling Dixie. And that's about it.
Yeah. It's listen, you can never go wrong with, I mean, greatest living composer. So
exactly. So, you know what? So I think that's our movie. Do you think our movie would actually succeed better than Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I mean, listen, part of the reasons, you know, and I'll admit I probably didn't go as extensive on the actors list as I should have, was I don't really think the problem started with anyone who was in the movie. I think any one of those actors in the movie could have done the job that they needed to do in the movie that we would want.
I just don't think they needed to be so glamorous. And again,
it wasn't glamorous.
Like everybody in that movie was just, you know, or at least all the whole cast was just very good looking actors. Everybody, as a matter of fact, there was an article that Kate Beckinsale was saying how like she was put on a strict diet, and so was Ben Affleck and everybody else. Everybody had to look, you know, thin. They had to look, you know, their best. And if you know anything about, you know, looking at, you know,
I was going to say par for the course for a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah. So that's part of, you know, I mean, it's Michael Bay, right? So anybody who sees, you know, probably photos of the 1940s, yes, men were thinner than probably we are now, but the women were more, I would say more voluptuous back then, even, you know, even if they were fit or what they call a fit woman, they weren't athletic looking. And that's what they made Kate Beckinsale look like. Says she was like almost athletic. They made all of them look super thin. Be more authentic about it. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I chose the directors that I chose. They pay tribute and homage to that day.
Right.
I think the way that it should be done.
Exactly.
And obviously, like, you know. You know, opinions are like assholes. They all stink, right? So, I have my opinion, but at the same time, I don't think I'm wrong. I think you're at least the things that I like to watch or that I enjoyed did a good job at, you know, paying tribute to the lives lost or the people who were in the story or participated in the event. You know, those are the ones you remember. And I think those are the ones that are most effective with something like that, you know, something historical like that. I think that's how it should be treated. It's not about the love story or anything like that. It's I think it's about the day and the event and
right
and what it means.
Oh, and you're right. I mean, look, I mean, the part that Cuba Gooding Jr. played, which was Petty Officer Second Class Doris Miller.
Yeah,
that is a that's actually a historical, you know, character who actually won medals because he downed a few Japanese airplanes during that time. John Voight, you know, played, of course, a real president, you know, Franklin D. Roosevelt. You know, so they were, you know, there was also Alec Baldwin playing, you know, Doolittle, which I don't think.
Yeah, his portrayal was shit.
Yeah, his portrayal of Doolittle is just horrible. But
no, I'm talking about Voight.
Oh, Voight. Well, Voight considered himself a Roosevelt expert. Like he actually
cool. Well, yeah. he never used his polio to prove a point.
Exactly, and this again,
he hid it from people.
Yeah. So, and not only that, but there's like a few things, like, you know, when he decided to stand up in front of
that's what
everybody.
I mean.
Yeah, exactly. He decided to stand. They say that never happened. So, the fact he considers himself a Roosevelt expert, and then he did that, a lot to question there. But yeah, so, I mean, it's funny when you look at the fictional character, the list of fictional characters compared to the list of historical characters, the fictional characters are more than the actual historical characters. And
yeah.
And look, I know that they have to take sometimes, you know, a little bit of creative license here and there. That's why nowadays whenever you see anything that says based off of a real story or, you know, inspired by a true story, what that means is that's like me saying, hey, you know what? I saw somebody make, you know, a pasta salad and I decided to do my own version of that.
Sure.
Right. So instead of penne pasta, I decided to use macaroni. I don't know. But, you know, it's like, oh, well, based off of that over there. What I'm saying, like, yeah.
But even to that point, right? Saving Private Ryan is... those aren't their real names.
No,
they're based on real people, but it's still pretty loose.
Right.
But that's paid attention to.
But the difference between Saving Private Ryan was that, yes, the events that they were portraying there probably did not happen at all. What those soldiers were going through is what happened.
It did happen, just not to the same extent. Like the actual, you know, the real life Private Ryan, they didn't send someone to go find him, like a mission like that. But that was a real thing in place. They actively pulled people off of the front line if they were the last surviving members of their family. Yeah, that was an actual,
that is correct, right? That is
military
correct
policy put in place,
right? And that is correct. But what I'm saying is that at least the movie itself, even though the characters and even though the events were based off of the Normandy invasion, but the events of trying to find this one character, it really, what that movie was trying to portray, right, was the brotherhood,
yeah,
of those soldiers and what they went through. And they portrayed, you know, the war itself, and what a toll it would take on them, because sometimes you would see the like, you know, just how hard it was,
but all true.
And as a matter of fact, the series in HBO, Band of Brothers, which is basically
Captain Winters,
kind of an offshoot of, you know, Saving Private Ryan, it was just and that was based off of Easy Company. And that's, you know, that's kind of showing, you know, what it was like compared to, again, you know, hey, let me do a love story and, you know, yeah, we'll do this attack. I mean,
yeah, it's, you know, in terms of, you know, how would I fix the movie? It would have been a, you know, something more in the vein of Saving Private Ryan or Band of Brothers.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I completely agree. And it's interesting how there's just few directors who have actually, you know, hit the mark when it comes to that. Christopher Nolan, you know, when he did Dunkirk, he really, I mean, the way he visually showed the movie, and it was about that one moment and what all these soldiers were going through and things like that. And, you know, and then you have, you know, Clint Eastwood is another one that just, you know, he also does a pretty good job. I can't believe he's become such a great director. every time I think of Clint Eastwood, I just think of him with, you know, holding a gun and he's a cowboy. Or if not, you know, walking around with an orangutan. But yeah, so very few directors, I think, can actually do a war movie the right way. And it just, this wasn't one of them. And the fact that they put so much money into it. And again, you know, they made money off of it. But it just, when it came to...
They're still making money. Joe just spent $8 for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, you know.
Well, keep in mind, iTunes, that's Apple making money. They probably made 50 cents off of that.
Did you get it on Blu-ray or DVD?
When I originally had it?
No, when you just bought it.
No, I bought it on Vudu.
Oh, yeah. Screw you guys. I had to change discs. It's all I ever remember. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
I got to get up from this chair and I'm go like, actually this movie flip is the disc. This long.
Hey. Because they and the best part is the intermission is like right after the Roosevelt speech, and you're like, oh yeah, shit's gonna happen now, and then it's like, oh, by the way, change the disc.
I put the movie on 4x skip for the entire Doolittle scene. no dialogue, like just couldn't do it anymore, and well, I put it on 4x fast forward, and I was like, good, let me get to the end. And well, then I watched the end scene, and that was that.
Dude, I just watched the Pearl Harbor attack. That's all I watch. Like, if ever I see it, that's the only thing I watch. And then after that, I go, nope. But
yeah.
But you know, going back to what Ralph was saying about changing a disc, that reminds me of the old Laserdisc days.
Yeah, flip that shit.
Where where you could have had a 1-hour movie, and you still had to flip the damn thing. So. All right, so this is the part of our show that we now do our fantasy picks. All of us, what we do is we will actually now that we discussed the movie and you know and how we think it will succeed. This is the part of the show that we are going to have our own fantasy picks, each one of us, and what we think, you know, what actors we think. But we're going to do something different, which is it doesn't matter from what era. The actor, actress, director, studio, whatever it is, you know, you could pick some, you know, we'll pick somebody from the 1920s if we have to, if, you know, if we feel that, you know, it fits the job. So who wants to start this one out?
Oof.
I mean, if we're going ham, like I would say to replace Rafe, I would do like a young, like Marlon Brando.
Oh, nice.
Like on the waterfront, like that kind of character. I think it would be gritty enough to make this movie much better, but he's also like the looker. So he's a handsome guy. He's going to get the girl, and it's going to make the ladies flock to the movie to see it. And that's what they wanted to do with this movie.
Interesting. Interesting. And you, Joe,
if we're going to start with Rafe, I'll go with, I actually don't even think you have to go outside of the people who are considered for the role. I actually think the other two people who are considered for the role would have been just fine. Like Matt Damon was, you know, still considered a handsome man. And, you know, listen, Ben Affleck's a better looking dude. But I think in the treatment of the role that I was looking for, and granted, it would never happen because he was in Saving Private Ryan. He probably wouldn't have taken on.
Oh, remember, this is a fantasy pick, so it doesn't matter, you know. Yeah. So,
but you know, I'd say Matt Damon would have been just fine for the role, and I actually think he would have done a better job with it. And then to go along with that, I actually think it would have been interesting to see Matt Damon and Fassbender. In the movie as 1 and 2.
Oh, okay.
Just to sort of see what that would have been. Cause I think if it's a different movie, you know, in terms of something that I'm going, that I'd be going for.
Right.
I think they would have done just fine in that role. I don't actually think you have to go out of the time period too far to get people who would have done a really, really good job. So like Rafe and Danny could have been the two people who are considered. The other person that they had considered for this role, and holy shit, is it good that it didn't happen, was Ashton Kutcher. Thanks for not having that happen. So I'll have to say Damon and Fassbender for Rafe and Danny. I'll even do Damon for Rafe and Fassbender for Danny. Within the actresses that were considered for the role, out of the three, I think I would have liked to see Gwyneth Paltrow do it. Gwyneth Paltrow was considered for the role at one point. If we're going to keep a main female lead in there, for what it is, I don't really know. But yeah, if I had to keep one in there, I think she brings she's obviously beautiful. She's a good actress, but she, I don't know, she seems more accessible, I guess.
Okay.
Or approachable as a person. And I think for a director, I'm picking Spielberg.
Spielberg. All right.
I don't know that the guy that he usually uses for sound, but whoever the guy was that did the sound in Jurassic Park, he gets to stay.
Gary Rystrom.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets to stay.
Actually, you know, it's funny. I picked for the same thing for the actor for Rafe. I actually picked Matt Damon too. I think he would have done pretty good, but because of the way I would make the story, which is no love triangle, Danny Walker would not have been in the movie. So his ass would have been, I would have, you know, axed his ass out. For Evelyn, I would have done Dana Delaney. She did a phenomenal job. She used to actually came out in this TV series called China Beach, which was based on Vietnam. And she was actually, I believe she was a doctor in there or a nurse or something like that. But I think she would have done a phenomenal job on this. For Doolittle, I think I would have picked Gene Hackman.
Mm.
I don't know why. I think Gene Hackman, I think, would have done a really good job on that. Shit, and then for my director, Ridley Scott.
Okay.
I think Ridley Scott would have done a phenomenal job with that.
Yeah, I thought about him too. He always does a good job.
Are you ready for me to blow your mind with my pick?
Or actually, you know what? Hold on.
Oh boy.
So I'm gonna change my fantasy pick.
You don't get a redraft, bro.
Most of it.
Oh, here we go.
Most of it.
30-minute podcast turned into 2 hours.
Wait. Okay. No. Here we go. So for Rafe, I would have done Tom Holland. What do you think? I would have done Tom Holland. Evelyn, I would have done Emma Stone. Doolittle would have done Tom Hanks.
What is this, Toy Story?
Doris Miller, I would have put Will Smith in it. From the Men in Black era, not Will Smith now. And then Roosevelt.
Oh, concussion Will Smith.
Concussion Will Smith. And then, I don't know, what do you think about Anthony Hopkins for Roosevelt?
Ooh.
Or do you think Gene Hackman would have been better?
I don't think Hackman is the right dude for Roosevelt.
Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah, he could definitely do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they CGI'd the shit out of it. So those
are my picks. And then, of course, it would have been rated R, and I probably would have just given it to Universal and say, hey, man, give me some money.
All right, Ralph, you're up.
Yeah, I would have did. So I'm going to stick. I would totally have Coppola direct it. Direct and produce. And then Brando as Rafe. I would have Judge Reinhold as
really?
As what's his name?
The other male character? Danny.
Danny. Yeah.
Oh, Danny Walker?
Yeah, I'd have Judge Reinhold. Because Judge Reinhold can be a gritty character, but he also is kind of goofy.
Right.
So him and Brando going back and forth. If you kept the progress of going back and forth over the girl, it would make sense. And then for Evelyn, I would probably do Michelle Pfeiffer, just because of the time period.
Damn, that's a good choice. I like that.
And obviously, like I said, the president, you could swap out any older actor of that generation, and they it wouldn't look like him anyway, just like it didn't in this movie. And they would probably do just as good, if not better, than John Voight. And then for Doolittle, I would probably do
Roosevelt. Oh, Cary Grant.
Cary Grant would be fantastic in any role. I want to say Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, damn. Doolittle.
Really?
That's interesting. Okay.
But I think he's too big for that role. That's the only thing.
Oh, yeah.
Again, this is a fantasy pick. It doesn't matter, man. We're I mean, shit. I'll put the greatest actor, you know, on earth on a B role. I don't care. I said supporting actor or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a tertiary actor. I don't care, you know. So
it's so tough because how many, like, from I pulled up just a list of like the highest grossing actors from the year the movie was made, not the year it was released.
A lot of good people still working around then.
So a lot of them still are.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's absolutely insane. Like just going through the year of like movies, that year started off with Castaway as the first release. And then you had Hannibal come out.
You had a Harry Potter. You had a Lord of the Rings. You had.
Then you had all these other IPs that were like sequels. And then just the beginning of them, you had The Mummy Returns. You had Shrek. You had Tomb Raider, Fast and the Furious, which were on what, 9 now?
14.
The third Jurassic Park, Planet of the Apes, the original crappy one with Mark Wahlberg, a bunch of sequels, Rush Hour 2, American Pie 2, Training Day, which is still holds up after, Jesus, 20 years I'm old. From Hell, that's a Johnny Depp classic.
Oh, wow.
Monsters, Inc., Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, and then ended the year with Lord of the Rings, man.
No, it was a good year, but if we're... Rob gave it a modern cast at the end, and that they all worked.
And it's funny because I thought of Tom Holland too, and he's just too small to me for a war movie.
Well, again, you got to remember, man. Back then, bro, they were 1940s. I think they were smaller people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? I mean, the amount of people that I have met that come. I mean, that, and again, you know, I guess you shrink when you get older, but. I mean, the amount of people that I've met that are veterans and they're like, you know, 5'10" or 5'9" or 5'8" have been a lot. So, and I don't think he's actually that small, is he?
Tom Holland? He's pretty short.
I'm just talking about, not even talking about height, I'm talking about presence and overall presence. He's not a big person.
Oh, well, I mean, no, I just think that he has a, you know, if you're going to portray somebody that, you know, especially in the 1940s, which, you know, again, the younger generation back then, which went to war and stuff like that, I think he would do a good job at that because he looks young. I mean, he just looks so young. And so, hey, this is, you know, you send them off to war. And next thing you know, he comes back hardened and stuff.
Average height was,
was
just under 5'8". So, bunch of knees around.
So, and Tom Holland was, for whatever reason, the internet decided to give me 173 centimeters, which is 5'6". So now I know how tall I am in centimeters.
You know what? In 2001, also, just in 2001, there was a Enemy at the Gates.
Yeah,
there was an Enemy at the Gates. It was called Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, that was actually. But but that one was with what's his name, Jude Law and Ed Harris.
Ooh, Jude Law, that would have been a good one too.
Yeah, that would have been good.
I mean, I did skip over some of the movies. Like, I didn't mention Save the Last Dance, The Wedding Planner, Exit Wounds with my buddy DMX, Bridget Jones' Diary,
Behind Enemy Lines with Gene Hackman,
Legally Blonde.
That was let me tell you, that's a horrible movie. But
Behind Enemy Lines?
Yes, but
good soundtrack, like audio track, not music. Yeah,
well, it's a great demo track for sound.
Yeah.
So, especially the part where, like, you know, the part where the missile's coming after the jet plane, and then all of a sudden the ejection seat happens and everything. The sound on that is actually phenomenal. Too bad the rest of the movie was just like.
Yo, you hating on Owen Wilson?
All right, so now this comes to the last part of our show.
So actually, who do we vote
for the win, for the W?
For the win. Who had the best fantasy cast there?
I'm going to have to go with yours, but I'm biased. Anything with Tom Hanks in it is just better. So I should have thought of it.
Wait, which of your four picks are we going with, Rob?
Well, hold on. Let me go back to this.
That is true. He threw up two.
So right. So here's the thing, like the cast.
He's in two leagues apparently.
No, actually, believe it or not, I actually on my list I actually have two. I have the regular one that we were talking about, and then my fantasy pick. The regular one we were talking about, I did not mention Gene Hackman, which I should have, and Ridley Scott. But my fantasy picks, that's the one that I had, Tom Holland, Emma Stone, Tom Hanks, Will Smith, Anthony Hopkins.
I think that's pretty damn solid. So, I think that's a good movie.
I think that would be a good movie. And then, of course, my version would have been just the attack on Pearl Harbor, what led up to it, and just concentrate on the servicemen and the servicewomen during that event, that one event, and then a brief show of the consequences of that. Like, let's say, you know, you show a mushroom cloud after that.
I mean, even if you look at the movies, and let's say you decided to even keep the character names in place, right? Yeah, I'm not keeping the character names for the love story part. I'm just saying, hey, we could show the perspective of what it may have been like to be near the hospital. We can show the perspective of maybe just, you know, Danny and
Rafe
as friends, as to drive the story forward, but just make it more.
Yeah. Just make it about, you know, the actual service.
Yeah.
I understand that they wanted to show the part of how America was right before the war, you know, the, how carefree or whatever, or how, you know, the fact that, you know, what they call, you know, the innocent time of America and stuff like that.
Read a book.
Right. So no, but I'm saying what they could have done, honestly, you do a 5-part Netflix show, let's say of Pearl Harbor, you know, do that part of, like, I don't know, do 2 episodes of that, you know, and then just go into, and that to me would have been fine. But for a movie that I have to sit there for 2 hours, I didn't need, or 3 hours, I didn't need that part.
Sure.
You know, that's my only thing on that. I just felt like, oh, okay, you know, yeah, you know, these, I don't know if how you guys felt, but every time somebody died, I didn't feel it. Is that a bad thing?
No. I just don't think it was.
Like when you see Tom Hanks die at the end of, die at the end, if you haven't seen Saving Private Ryan, I don't know what you're waiting for. But if you haven't seen, you know, like Tom Hanks' character dying at the end, was heartfelt, because here's a man that was just looking, and as a matter of fact, I mean, pretty much half the group or almost the entire group died just for this one guy, and every one of the people that died, you felt it, you just had such an emotional connection to it. And in this movie, every time somebody died,
it didn't matter
to me.
It wasn't with the same wasn't with the same weight, you know. So
no, it wasn't, it just didn't have that weight, and I wish it did, because I wanted to be emotionally invested in it, but nope, nothing like that. So that's pretty much on our fantasy picks, and you know, so we are coming to the end on this. So I just wanted to briefly talk about a movie that is so bad that didn't qualify for this podcast, and that, my friends, is Human Centipede.
It's a pretty terrible movie. I've actually haven't.
Human Centipede. I mean,
I have no need to watch it, so I haven't seen it.
They made 3 of them.
I'm aware of how many times.
I'm only aware that they made 2.
People.
There were 3
stitched together to shit in each other's. I get it. It was awful.
Yeah, there's 3. There's 3 of them.
Movie that is like I mean, this is a movie that, I mean, with a show of hands or whatever, but should this movie have ever been filmed?
No.
It's just a movie that, I don't know, I just feel like this is not a movie that nothing we could do can make, you know, can actually fit. I don't think anybody.
Listen, horror movies are, then the horror category is an interesting one. I do like scary movies.
I'm going to have to say I hate you guys. Like that, Centipede, and that there's 3 of them. Tom Six, who created it, has stated that the Human Centipede 4 will never happen. However, he might do a spinoff featuring the human caterpillar. That is terrifying. That is something I did not need to know.
And this is a man that's actually, you know, some studios actually paying him money to make these movies. And again, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, sometimes when you hear about really good projects that are so that you're, you know, they get you excited. And again, this is where the whole overhype thing, you know, sometimes comes in, but it gets you so excited about hearing about a certain project, you know, that they're thinking about doing, and it never manifests itself to happen. It's sad. It's just, you know, and then all of a sudden you hear about these movies like this, and that somebody gave money to these, you know, to these directors or writer or whoever, you know, to make this movie. And you're like, what the fuck, man? I mean, what the hell? There are so many bad movies out there that actually get greenlit, but the ones that get people excited, all of a sudden they're in development hell, or you know, somebody's holding the rights because, you know, somebody doesn't want to do whatever it is. It's just, it kind of sucks, man, the fact that that happens. But yeah, this is one of those movies that I feel like not only should have it never been made, but if when the director came through the studio office and pitched that idea, I think at that moment they should have done one of those cartoon things where they hold him from the back and like from the pants and just open the door and just throw him out the door.
They actually banned Human Centipede 2 in England. Here, this is hold on, let me read what it says.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go into the Human Centipede 3. They deemed it a sexually violent and potentially obscene with unacceptable material that cannot be fixed with cuts.
Yeah, I don't know how you edit out the sound of someone gargling shit.
So here's a
except here's... just dubbing over it and being like, brownies. I don't know how you know.
So here's what the internet say. It says, according to Six, the concept arose from a joke he had made with friends about punishing a child molester by stitching his mouth to the anus of a fat truck driver. And that's where this story came from. That's like Kevin Smith was sometime when he was high on his podcast and he all of a sudden came up with the story idea of a man being stitched together to become a walrus. That's where like the movie Tusk came from. And I heard that podcast and it's actually kind of amusing, but you could tell they were high off of, you know, they were high out of their minds and they were just like, well, imagine this and imagine that. And next thing you know, he got money for it and he made it.
All right, folks. So yeah, so that's going to be our show for tonight. So tune in next time. And, you know, so if you guys want to leave any comments or anything like that, we are on Facebook, Fantasy Picks Movie Edition, also on Instagram and the Twitters. All right. So just be kind to us and we will try to be kind to you. Get back. So my name is Robert Mota. I'm signing off.
See you guys. It's Joe.
Take it easy, guys. Ralph here.
All right, guys. Take care. Peace.